Chapter 10. A Dagger of Truth.
Put these on, and damn your eyes, be swift about it.
Dior stood in the belly of a grand wardrobe, magnificent coats and gowns arrayed all about her. She was draped only in a damp towel, and we fancied the chill of that ancient monster lingered at her back. Yet she was young, this bower bird, and ever possessed of a weakness for shining things, having grown up so sorely in lack of them, we suppose. And so, her mouth was agape as she stared at the finery on display around her, the shadow of Nikita Divok fading in that rainbow of bold chiffon and rich satin and gold thread twill. Fuck my... A silken chemise hit her in the face, followed by a barrage of accoutrements, hose and garters, elbow-length gloves, dainty pointed heels of embroidered velvet damask. Dior did her best to catch the pieces and maintain her towel, finally surrendering hope of the former for the sake of the latter as the volley continued. Worm finally emerged from the wardrobe's depths, carrying a wondrous white gown of crepe and lace.
This will, sir.
She stopped short, bristling.
Why are you not dressed?
Dior looked about the scattered clothes, back into the maidservant's eyes. Violetta Tremaine.
Who in the Mother Maid's name is Violetta Tremaine?
A girl I shared a squat with after my mama died. She was the second dead body I ever saw, and the state they left her in when they were done with her is the reason I cut my hair and dressed as a boy ever since. The Grail shrugged, her voice hard as alley cobbles.
Damn my eyes, all you like. I've no idea what I'm doing with any of this shite.
Worm paused at that, studying Dior toe and crown and all between. She seemed to regard the girl in a new light after her defiance of Nikita in the bathhouse, her outrage at his unwanted touch. But setting her face in a scowl, she plucked the chemise off the younger girl's shoulder.
Raise your arms.
My towel will come off.
As shall my head, should the Contessa lose patience.
Dior yelped as Worm dragged her arms skyward, her towel dutifully falling to the floor. The maidservant hauled on the chemise, kneeling to tug up the silken hosiery and bind it with garters at Dior's thighs. Worm's fingers were skirting terribly close to dangerous places, and while a servant was certainly used to this sort of thing, we saw Dior was blushing to be stripped naked and manhandled so. Worm finally stood, wrangling the heavy gown over Dior's head, following with a corset of boned velvet and lace.
I've never worn a...
She gasped as Worm drew the ties, cinching the fabric tight. Wincing as her insides adjusted, Dior looked at the gentry's frock coats about her with unmasked envy.
Who did all this belong to?
She managed.
Neve Amegen, once Laird Lady of this Dun and Duchess of all Oswey.
We looked to a painting on the wall, looming above the silks and velvets. It showed the same woman as that statue in the Hall of Crowns, the legendary Nine Swords. But rather than a sculpture of a conqueror, this painting depicted the Duchess with her famille. She was seated on her ironwood throne beside a striking man with a red beard and dashing smile. He stood behind the Duchess, to her right, a partner, surely, but not an equal. The couple were surrounded by children, four daughters, all fine and strong.
She looks so young, Dior murmured. That was painted long ago,
Worm said, binding the corset ties.
In happier nights.
What happened to them?
Laird Aidan died many years ago, during the clan wars.
The maidservant nodded to the daughters, one at a time.
Lady Ashling was killed leading the defence of Dun Quin. Lady Una was commander of the Nine Swords Legions, and Lady Caitlin, a captain in her fleet. Both were murdered when the Untamed conquered the city.
Worm glanced to the last of the girls, a pretty child with deep red hair and sharp green eyes.
Lady Yvaine is in the east, married to an Eladani lord.
And what happened to the Nine Swords?
Nikita Divok.
Worm finished with the ties, lips pursed.
Now turn. Sit.
Sweet Mother Maid, it had not kill you to say
Dior was twisted on the spot by the thrall's strength, thrust onto a stool, sputtering as the maid threw a handful of pale powder into her face and stifling decolletage. Worm raised a stick of coal, Dior closing her eyes only just swift enough to avoid a blinding.
Stop squirming, curse you.
I don't wear this shite, I told.
Eyes shut, lips like same.
The maidservant set to work, squinting in the dim light. The Grail tried to sit obediently, lips pursed, body motionless. But obedience had never been Dior Lachance's strongest suit, and she was soon mumbling again, fingers fidgeting in her lap.
That tickles. Be quiet. Careful, you'll have my bloody eye out. Flinch again and see prophecy fulfilled.
The Grail settled down again, sullen and pouting.
You know, I always suspected the business of being pretty was utter bollocks, she finally hissed. Now I know for certain, so I suppose thanks are in order, mademoiselle.
I like to serve.
Worm sighed, a half dozen hairpins pressed between her lips as she surveyed her work.
You've honestly never worn a dress before.
Dior shook her head, eyes still closed. Not since I was 11, thank God. Best thing about dressing as a boy is avoiding the ludicrous fuckaboutery that comes with being a girl. The Grail shrugged, lips quirked. Not that I've an aversion to the end result, mind you, but there's not much use for a corset when you're pinching some fool's purse, and I doubt running from the watch would be helped by 7 additional layers of under... Something cinched tight about her neck, near choking, and then...
Open your eyes.
A stranger was sat before Dior when she obeyed. It was only when she lifted her hand, and the young lady opposite moved like same, that she seemed to realise she was staring into a looking glass. Her lips, not ashen now, but bright red with paint, parted slow, and she touched her face as if to ensure her eyes spoke true. Her flesh was powdered death pale, lashes and the beauty spot on her cheek picked out in dark, sharp relief. A choker of blood-red rubies was fixed at her throat, a pearl-white waterfall of skirts tumbling below her ornate cream corset, down to a pair of beautiful, pointed heels. Worm stood behind her, fixing her hair with iron pins before lifting the pièce de résistance into place. A pale, ornate wig, styled with the gaudy flair usually reserved for the finest of nobility. Dior Lachance was a girl who had hidden as a boy most of her life. This was the first moment she'd been unveiled as a young woman. And while that young woman was impressive, stunning, in fact, still, her expression was clouded as she looked at her reflection, the shadow of that beast in the bathhouse rising at her back once more.
What is wrong? Worm asked. You look passable.
Dior shook her head.
I feel naked.
Worm met her eyes then, a touch of pity finally softening that emerald and sapphire.
No purses to filch, no watch to flee here, Mademoiselle Lachance. But though it's a strange truth, all this ludicrous fuckaboutery can serve purpose. Silk will prove stronger than steel on the right battleground. Beauty can be a kind of weapon, and bestow a rare power. The only kind they will allow you in this place anyway. But wield it well, and she will mark you."
The maidservant's voice dropped low.
"And she can protect you from him."
Worm stepped back, motioned to the door.
"Now hurry, the Contessa awaits."
The maidservant swept from the room, and more subdued now, Dior followed, hiking up her skirts and wobbling on her uncomfortable shoes. We followed, flitting rafter to rafter on tiny red wings as Dior was led stumbling and cursing down a long stone corridor. The air was heavy and chill, ringing with the song of crows. A trail of bloody footprints stained the floorboards before her, leading to a pair of grand doors flanked by two young gallants in steel breastplates and Divok colours. They were red-headed Ossians both, handsome of face and green of eye, their chins dusted with the scrawny beards of boys who long to be men. The stench of murder ever hung over Dunmergen like a pall, but we felt it stronger here, deepening with every one of Dior's wobbling steps. The pair nodded to Worm, watching Dior's unsteady approach with bemused expressions, obviously as unsure as she was. But with eyes on the boys and hands full of skirt, the Grail stepped in one of those bloody footprints, slipping, almost falling, and in a blinking, both lads near dropped their swords in their lunge to catch her.
"You will, m'lady?"
one young gallant asked, holding her steady.
"Oui,"
she said, finding her footing.
"Merci, messieurs."
"Best be careful."
The other flashed a bright smile.
"Not that catching you wasn't a pleasure, but it's a long fall off those pretty heels."
Dior smiled back, lowering her eyes. It seemed a light moment, a harmless flirt, commonplace in any tavern or court in the realm. But looking to their hands, Dior saw each lad was scorched with a brand, a black heart circled by thorns.
"Nikita's mark," she whispered.
"Aye,"
the taller one replied, eyes shining.
"Praise be our laird and master."
Her smile died then, the moment with it, and the flirt seemed not so harmless anymore. Studying them from above, it was hard for us to not wonder who these boys had been. Soldiers, obviously, sworn to the Nine Swords' service before her city fell. But had they fought before they bent the knee, or had they bowed to save their own skins? Did it trouble them to serve this evil? Or did the love they bore it now swallow their shame? Worm nodded thanks, glanced to Dior to ensure she was steady. Satisfied, the maid knocked once, brisk, then flung the doors wide. And Dior flinched, hand up to her face as the stench washed over us all in a red, reeking wave. So much blood. A parlour room awaited. Polished mahogany, velvet and satin, chandeliers of gleaming gold glass. Two doors opened left and right into boudoirs so palatial they could bed dozens. Obviously the chambers of the former lady and laird of this keep. Dior's face was still ashen as Worm pulled her within, and we flitted inside behind them, up, up, nestling at last in the shadows of the rafters above, every part of us now afeared. Closing the doors behind them, the maidservant urged the Grail to her knees before the figure waiting in the room's heart. Cold as tombs, motionless as mountains, as beautiful as the first snows of fresh fallen winter, the beast named Lily Divo. She reclined on an ornate chaise longue, her great white wolf beside her, its one blue eye flushed scarlet and locked on Dior. The vampire was flanked by three ladies in waiting, all immaculately attired, beautiful ball gowns and powdered cheeks and ornate hairpieces. Yet Lily de Vaux was not dressed as a noblewoman like her entourage. In fact, the heartless was hardly dressed at all. A sleeveless black robe was draped over her shoulders, two strips of sheerest silk barely protecting her modesty. A half corset bound her ribs beneath, cinched her waist, black velvet and whalebone. Her bare legs were crossed, demure, but her eyes burned with dark promise as she gazed upon the grail. A golden circlet sat on her brow, and her hair spilled over her shoulders to the floor in red rivers. Her skin was porcelain pale, yet now unveiled, we saw it was decorated with beautiful inkwork, fey spirals wending up her right arm and down her left leg. Not as intricate, but assuredly similar to those that adorned the skin of Phoebe Adonsair.
Nyeth, we realized, the tattoos of the Ossian Highlanders. Another servant in a beautiful gown was on her knees, scrubbing the bloody footprints off the stone. We recognized the twin beauty spots on her cheek at once. Young Isla, Joaquin's beloved ever after. To have survived the fall of two cities only to be press-ganged into the maid service of these monsters was a cruel fate, but at least she lived. The lass met Dior's eyes, risking a small nod. Dior's gaze followed the footprints into one of the boudoirs, and there she saw naked people about the room, on the floors or silken sheets, one even dangling from the chandelier. Many of them were the valuables she'd been brought to Dunmergen with, pretty young men and women she'd known and suffered alongside. They were dead now. Every one. Throats torn open or heads torn away, bellies ripped wide and privates ripped off. Dior had surely seen cruelty before, on the streets of childhood, in her journeys with Gabriel. But she still blanched at the sight of such wanton slaughter. We remembered Nikita in the bathhouse then, drenched head to foot in blood, understanding at last where it had come from.
"Mistress," Worm declared, "the prisoner has been prepared, as commanded."
"We thank thee, Worm. Artful handiwork, as always." Lily pressed one finger to crimson lips, thoughtful. "Yet, thou art somewhat tardy in thy arrival." We saw Worm tense then, heard her heartbeat quicken as she pressed brow to boards.
"Forgive me, mistress. Count Nikita came upon us in the bathhouse.
Thou wouldst blame my brother for thine own ineptitudes?" Lily frowned. "A lord of night, a king of dark heaven's splendours, to be held account for a servant's failings."
"No, mistress, of course, the fault was mine. Please, I beg forgiveness."
Lily smiled, indulgent, waving one pale hand. "Of course, love." Worm sighed, like a man who receives pardon just as he steps onto the gallows. "Kiss ye my feet," Lily commanded, "and all sin shall be forgiven." One might have expected the young woman to flinch, to balk, God help her, to refuse. But without hesitation, Worm scuttled forward, low as her namesake. A look of revulsion crossed Dior's face as the thrall prostrated herself. And as Lily stretched out one long leg, the maid pressed her lips to the dead goddess's pale, ring-clad toes, one at a time. Dior appeared uncertain where to look, at the girl being humiliated for the sake of a few minutes' wait, or at the innocents slaughtered
for the sake of a madman's meal. But she settled on the latter in the end. The former was in part her fault, after all. The Heartless followed Dior's eyeline, dark smile dimming.
"Thou shalt excuse my brother his peccadilloes," she sighed. "Many nights hath passed since our larder overflowed with such bounty. A king must have his catharsis."
Lily's eyes fell on Worm, lifting her lips from the last of her toes.
"Have those served with the evening meal," she ordered,
waving to the leavings of her brother's feast.
"There be yet dregs in them, and the children ever hunger."
"I live to serve, mistress," the girl breathed, her voice thick with devotion.
Worm whisked into the boudoir and lifted the first corpse she saw, a young man missing both throat and privates. Dior stared as the maidservant slung the body over her shoulder like a sack of feathers, and lifting a lass, likewise mutilated, Worm hurried from the room, Isla scrubbing furiously at the spatters in her wake.
"Thou hast the look of muddied blood."
Dior flinched. She'd apparently not heard Lily move, but the vampire now stood only inches away. Lily gazed down with jet-black eyes, the ink on her skin visible through her sheer silks. Reaching out, she caressed Dior's cheek, soft as spring rain.
"Those eyes," Lily mused. "Those lashes. Those lips. Elidani stock, surely. But thy complexion be Ossian through and through. From whence dost thou hail?"
Dior swallowed hard, averted her eyes. From on high, she somehow looked more exposed than the Contessa, despite the finery she wore. To us, she seemed not a beautiful maid in a dazzling gown, but a soldier without her shield, a knight without her armour.
"I grew up in a city called La Chame."
"We know it," Lily nodded. "We visited with our brothers 12 decades past. A pit of lepers and vipers, we thought it, beggared of beauty and reeking of dung."
Dior smiled faintly. "It hasn't changed much since then, I fear." The caress at her cheek slipped lower, the dark goddess lifting the grail's chin so she was forced to meet her eyes.
"Thou shalt refer to us at all times as mistress."
Dior's faint smile died beneath that monster's stare. It was bereft of anything approaching life, warmth, compassion. It was the gaze of a shark closing in on a drowning swimmer, mouth slipping wide to reveal endless rows of jagged teeth.
"Mistress," Dior murmured.
Lily's lips curled. "Thou art a beauty, fey and fine. Pray, why did ye hide it?"
"The streets I grew up on were cruel to girls, mistress."
"There be no street under heaven that is not. But we learned long ago the solution to that dilemma is not being afraid, poppet. It is being feared."
Dior gazed into Lily's eyes at that, lips parting. We knew the Contessa's blood would be at work within the grail now, softening her will, warming the halls of her heart. And though perhaps it was my own fears speaking, it seemed a moment of understanding passed between the pair, the girl on her knees, and this goddess to whom she knelt. It was hard, sharp, a dagger of truth. The Heartless fussed with Dior's outfit a moment, gold-dipped fingers straightening the bodice, adjusting the choker of rubies around the Grail's throat. And standing back to admire her work, the Ancient finally nodded. Walk with me. Lily stalked from the room, silk flowing about her, wolf slinking at her side. From the glares the ladies-in-waiting shot her, Dior realized she was expected to follow first, and she wobbled to her feet, hurrying to catch up as the women flocked around her. There had been swans on the lake near Lawson when I was a child, and flitting above them now, we fancied Lily's ladies moved like those birds once had, regal and graceful. All three were scorched with Lily's mark, the same antlered crown that Worm wore, yet we noted their brands were fresh, and that all were marred further somehow, scarred hands or sliced faces, or missing fingers. Wolves were embroidered on the fabric of their dresses, and all wore some shade of green, noble colours for the noble born. These must have been the ladies-in-waiting to the Duchess Amergen, we realised, now forced to serve the murderer of their mistress by the power of her blood. And Dior was only two drops away from that same hell. Lily led us down a corridor lined with beautiful armour, draped with clan cloth of the Mergen, two shades of green hatched with black and blue. Reaching a set of double doors, two bowing thrall swords drew them aside. A freezing wind struck our wings, but though she wore next to nothing, Lily walked onto the balcony as if into a summer's day, her white wolf beside her. As Dior followed, we saw dark ocean beyond the battlements, white caps crashing on the Gulf of Wolves. The great snow-clad bailey below was all a bustle, a multitude of folk lit by flickering torchlight, shouts rising above the song of the waves. It took a moment for us to comprehend what we were seeing. The folk Dior had travelled with from Avalane were clustered outside the ruined sepulchre of the Mother Maid. Over 1,000, guarded by thrall swords in Divok livery. Upon the broken cathedral's stairs stood Saraya, doffing her tricorn to the flock of vampires before her. The tattooed one named Dragan and his paramour Alex, the sister with the broken wheel about her neck, the grey jester, Kane, Kiara. All the members of the untamed court were assembled, and pointing to a bedraggled group of men on the steps beside her, Saraya called aloud,
"A half dozen head, unskilled but strong and hale all. What am I bid?"
A young vampire wearing a cloak of what looked to be children's skin called above the clawing winds,
"Three knights, 50 swords. 350 to Blood Lord Remil,"
Saraya cried.
"Do I hear four?"
The jester raised his hand, his voice like oily smoke.
450.
"Four to Blood Lord Grey. Hear us five."
Saraya looked around the gathering, dark eyes gleaming.
"Fresh from the Nordland, this lot, well fed and unspoiled."
Dior watched on, her face running pale with horror.
"They bid knights of service to my brother,"
Lily murmured beside her.
"One drop of water is worth a fortune in a desert. And while crowns are often won with steel, they are always kept with coin."
Dior said nothing, staring down into the dark. A cart waited near the dun's doors, corpses within, naked and mutilated. As the Grail watched, Worm threw two more bodies onto the pile. People were being hauled from wooden pens over by the stables, elderly folk all, pushed into a wagon by more scorched. We recalled that foul blood hoard within the walls of Newton then, understanding the depths of the depravity at work here. The frail and elderly would be fed to the wretched outside, the young and strong, auctioned off to purchase the loyalty of Nikita's court, a brutality and callousness from the darkest of nightmares. Gabrielle had warned Dior of the evil of these things, but to witness it firsthand was another trial entire. Her eyes fell on a gaggle of children, ragged and tear-stained, not one older than 10. Among them stood a small girl with dirty blonde hair, a hand-woven Moppet doll clutched in one hand.
Mila, Dior whispered.
This troubles thee to see.
Nelly's voice dragged us back to that balcony, to Dior's own jeopardy. The girl licked at ash-dry lips, swallowing hard.
We, mistress.
Why, be this so different to a farmer and his sheep?
Of course it's different, Dior hissed, bewildered. They're people.
People they are, but animals also. And though it may seem cruel to thee, so too the spring cull to the lamb.
Lily gestured to the beast beside her,
or the wolf's teeth to the doe. In the wild, there be no rabbit nor deer who dies peaceful in his sleep, Poppet. Young or old in the end, they perish in anguish. Torn apart by predators, all of them. Such hath it been since time's dawning, for the strong to devour the weak. And till but a few decades ago, thee and all thy kind were content with that sacred truth. Lily watched the prisoners below, ruby lips curling.
You, people, only believe our new world cruel, because in it, for the very first time, thou art the prey.
The jester had won the bid and was taking possession of his stock now, while another group were being marched onto the steps. Lily turned to face Dior fully, engulfing her in the polished jet of her eyes.
What doth the Forever King desire of thee?
I don't know, mistress, I swear it.
The blood mage who slew Rickard on the mare. Who was she?
Her name is Selene. She's Gabriel's sister.
Who was she to thee?
Nobody. I only knew her a few weeks. Mistress.
Hisani.
The ancient hissed that word like venom, pinning the grail in her bottomless stare. Dior held perfectly still. Perfectly mute, cold wind filling the silence between them.
Know thee this name, sweet child?
Lily finally asked. Dior stared hard into those midnight eyes and did what she did best.
No, mistress,
she lied. Relief flooded us through at that. A single taste of Lily's ancient blood was not enough to have Dior betray us. But dread followed quick. The thought of what must come next. And the heartless smiled, ocean winds rippling in her long silken locks.
Kneel.
The whip rang like a pistol shot in the night. And though we thought she might resist, that the gifts of the Divok might prove as useless as those of the Vos against her. The Grail immediately obeyed, sinking to her knees under that goddess's cold, dead gaze. Lily slipped her golden blade from inside her corset, and the wolf beside her growled then, ears pressed back to his skull.
Hush now, prince.
The beast lowered his head, obedient, keeping Dior fixed in his one good eye as Lily smiled.
Forgive him. He is a jealous little brute.
And reaching down, she sliced the porcelain skin up the inside of her thigh, cutting deep through the tattoo and into the artery beyond.
Drink.
All our thoughts raged now. Disgust, defiance, but most of all, fear. A second taste would leave Dior but one drop from servitude. Lily knew the name Isani. She was old enough to remember the Wars of the Blood, the Red Crusade, the fall of Ilya's brood into near catastrophe. And losing the Grail to this monster's clutches must surely push us closer to our final ruin. We prayed the Grail might resist, might refuse, might unveil some ploy she'd fashioned to escape this fate. But instead, Dior closed her eyes, and as if commanded by heaven itself, pressed her mouth to the smooth flesh of that devil's thigh. Its scent was autumn's rust and iron's end, that blood, heady and impossibly thick. Lily's hand snaked behind Dior's head, pulling her closer, tighter, deeper. Terror rushed over us as we watched, helpless, Dior groaning now, her hand slipping up and over the vampire's buttocks as she drank, clutching tighter. Lily smiled, but again no hint of it reached those eyes, deep and lonely as a starless sky. Dior's mouth roamed the slice in that pale flesh, kissing higher now, licking up, up, toward the dark shadow between Lily's thighs. But satisfied, the ancient pulled the Grail away, dragging her effortlessly to her feet. Dior's eyes were glazed, blood smeared thick and red on her lips, and she blinked like a drunkard, as if unsure of where she was. Lily leaned forward, serpentine, tongue outstretched to catch the long spool of ruby red dripping from Dior's chin. Drawing it into her own, Lily took the smooth swell of Dior's lower lip into her mouth and sucked it clean, while we listened to the girl's heart thundering against her breast. "Kith, dream not. Did ye know that?" Lily whispered, sticky lips brushing gentle against Dior's. "Our slumber is as death, but tonight thou shalt dream of Lily, Poppet, sure and true. And a morrow night shall Lily have the truth of thee." The monster glanced to one of the ladies beside her, the graceful older dame with the deep blade scar beneath the powder on her chin. Lily drew breath to speak, but at that moment Worm returned from below, hands yet drenched with blood as she fell to her knees beside the ladies in waiting, gasping for breath.
"I have returned, mistress," the lass wheezed.
Lily smiled red. "Timely arrival for once, Worm. Take our prize below." The serving girl pressed her head to the stone.
"At once, mistress."
Lily's gaze lingered on Dior a heartbeat longer, hungry, endless, cold as winter's deep. And then she turned away, gazing out upon that auction of the doomed. Dior still looked dizzy, barely seeming to take note as she was whisked back to the dressing room. We followed, watching as she was stripped of her finery and wig by the dutiful Worm, and clad in simple servant's cloth, the Grail was escorted down to the dungeons once more. She seemed to be surfacing from the spell of Lily's blood now, looking about briefly for Aaron, but the Capitaine's cell was empty as she passed it by. Worm locked Dior in her own cell, peering now through the slot.
"A word of advice?"
Dior blinked, looking up into those mismatched eyes.
"If Count Nikita comes to you in the night, don't fight."
The maid sighed, blue and green deeping to grey.
"He hurts you worse if you fight."
And then she was gone. Dio hung her head in the dark, the maidservant's footsteps fading on the stairs. Fluttering in on tiny wings, we settled on the smooth skin of her left hand, wondering how soon it might bear the Contessa's mark. Above, we could hear that dreadful auction still going on, the wails of prisoners, the choir of 1,000 crows.
God, I wish Gabe were here,
Dior whispered. We were saddened at that, fearful and sick. We beat our wings, gentle, just to remind her again that she was not alone in this hell. But she looked at us then, blue eyes shining, a touch colder now, the scent of Lily's blood still thick on her breath as she whispered,
Selene, when we fought Kiara at Kenheim, when Gabe fell.
She licked her red-stained lips, swallowing thick.
Did he fall? Or did you...
Tap, tap. Our wings beat on her wrist, furious, defiant. Tap, tap. We spelled out the word for emphasis, tiny legs crawling on her skin. No.
Tusk, tusk, tusk.
The last Liathi glanced up as Jean-Francois clucked his tongue. Lifting a finger, the historian wagged it as if in the face of a deceitful child.
When a man lies, he kills a part of his world and a part of his soul besides.
The Book of the Redeemer, Selene replied. 1327.
Chapter and verse. Jean-Francois nodded. Hardly becoming of a servant of the Kingdom of Heaven, is it, Mademoiselle Castille, to lie to the last scion of the Redeemer's line?
The monster lifted her chin, hissing behind the cage on her mouth.
Everybody lies, sinner. But we did it only for the good.
Ah, oui, the Marquis smiled. The greatest wickedness is always done for the good, is it not? But what a relief it is to learn that the Almighty's soldiers are just as hypocritical as the rest of us.
The monstress fixed Jean-Francois in her black stare, glittering with cold rage. The historian only tilted his head and raised his quill, and glowering, Selene continued.
Dior chewed her lip as we gave her answer, watching us with those grifter's eyes, ever older than her years. We'd no knowing if she believed us, but still, she seemed to be slowly coming back to herself now, that crimson daze she'd fallen under, fading away. And dragging one hand through her hair, she finally spat red off her tongue.
I have to get out of here, she declared. I have to get out of here tonight.
We circled once upon her hand, batting our wings upon her skin. Tap.
Can you be my eyes? Find me a safe path through the dun, over the walls?
The Grail shook her head, jaw clenched.
I don't want to abandon these poor people, but I'm no use to anyone if that devil makes me her thrall.
The mote of me circled again, trying to convey confusion, agitation. We'd searched the chateau as she slept during the day, and while we'd found no sign of Mother Marin, we did know a way by which she might make a run to us. Crawling over her hand, we spelled out 5 letters, painstakingly slow.
Sewer, she whispered. Good. That's good.
It was a tiny flicker of hope, but while we ever sought to aid the Grail, in truth, we were unsure at all of this. God had brought Dior to this place for a reason, and to abandon the dun before we'd discovered Marin's resting place seemed a kind of sin. Yet more pressing, while we might guide her to freedom, we could do little to actually help her escape. Our mote was unable to steal a key or even lift a latch. Dior still looked a touch befuddled on the taste of that monster's blood. How was she to slip her cell in such a state?
We walked over her hand again, spelling out a simple but all-important question. Lock?
No fear on that score, she whispered.
The girl's lips twisted in the gloom, and reaching up to her growing mop of hair, she plucked a slender treasure from its pale tumble. It gleamed as she twirled it through her clever fingers, iron hard and dagger thin. The key to all our problems. Jean-Francois lifted his gaze from his tome, and despite himself, the vampire smiled. A hairpin.